This is the Empowered Caregiver. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here are the Empowered Caregivers and your hosts, Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand.
Liza Hellenbrand, and tonight we are going to start the show off by talking about innovations in pain management with Maxwell Wessenberg, the owner of Max Wellness Pain Relief that is located in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi, Max. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of what you do to help people, I just want you to take a minute and let us know a little bit about yourself and what led you into this line of work.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on. So I'm Max Wessenberg, doctor of physical therapy. I graduated from Concordia University in 2019, and I grew up and born and raised in Oshkosh. So my background as a PT, I was always interested in neurological conditions, even when I was in school, and that was always my area of expertise and interest. After graduation, I did a lot of travel therapy contracts, kind of jumping around to different facilities, getting a lot of different experience in different settings. And then for a year prior to opening up my business, I was working in a prosthetics clinic as their in-house PT, with working with amputees and different orthotic bracing for different neurological conditions as well. And while I was there, I found out about this innovative, relatively new but very unheard of medical device. When I was doing a literature review on a particular type of stroke patient that I was treating, that was kind of a rare subtype of stroke that had extreme kind of burning pain. And so this device works really, really well with not just pain, but also numbness. And one of the research articles had mentioned that this Calnair device could be used with that specific type of stroke. So that kind of got me looking into it and researching everything that I possibly could. And the more that I found out about it, the better it seemed to be. And it was almost too good to be true. And I called around to different clinic owners around the country who had already started using this device. And I just kept hearing more and more positive things. So I started a business about it, and I've been seeing people for about a year now. I got the device last April, but I didn't open up my own clinic until this past year in September.
Okay, so you keep referencing this device, and I guess what I need a little clarity on is this device is different from what other people in physical therapy clinics use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this was invented in Italy around 20 years ago.
Is there
a Calmare?
Is there a name for the device, Max?
Yeah, the name of the device is called Calmare. It's Italian. It means to soothe.
Okay.
And it performs what's known as scrambler therapy. And so this was originally invented to treat chemotherapy-induced peripheral neuropathy and the kind of burning pain, numbness that brings forth. But the more different neurological conditions that they tried to treat with it, they're finding it works for almost any kind of nerve pain. But it has to be a true, pure nerve pain. It can't be related to inflammation or any kind of mechanical impingement of the nerve. It has to just be an incorrect signaling message that this device kind of goes in and corrects.
Okay. And
so,
go ahead.
To answer your question as well, I always relate this to a TENS device, which that's the electrical stim that most people are familiar with. That TENS device sends in a very pure sine wave, this mathematical waveform. And it forces your muscle cells to contract. Your brain knows that it's coming from outside the body. It doesn't confuse it in any way for its own signaling. But how this Calmare device works is it uses language that your nervous system uses. And so it's putting in a actual message of non-pain that your brain recognizes. And we put the electrodes on wherever you're having your pain, but it doesn't just work there. It works all the way through your nervous system, because it gets taken up to your spinal cord, up your spinal cord, into your brain, into the somatosensory cortex, which is your brain's map of the body. And when you have a stroke, that's the area that gets damaged. It's not that your hand got damaged with a stroke. It's that brain region associated with the hand got damaged, and then the signaling is off. So this works on all levels, both central and peripheral.
Right. So this device is doing all of that by getting to the kind of core piece of the problem. So since we're an empowered caregiver show, I want to make sure that we're clear kind of about why you're here tonight, right? So you're here to help us understand, as people who take care of folks that are in pain, why this might be a way to think outside of the box, correct?
Yeah, and just to raise awareness that this technology even exists. This is one of the very few devices out there inside the category of what is called neuromodulation, where these devices, these new devices, are talking to the nervous system directly and modulating the conversation that's happening.
Wow.
I have one question. If we go a few steps back, you said some conditions it's mm-hmm. not ideal for. I know on your website you had a pretty lengthy list of the people that could yes. benefit from this. And I would love for you to, one, say your website so people know where to go. And then, two, can you name off some of the top or most common patients that you see?
Sure, yeah. The website is the name of the business, maxwellnesspainrelief.com. I have a bunch of information on there to learn about how it works, who we can help, and then even explaining a little bit of the neuroscience behind pain. So who this works extremely well for is the chemotherapy-induced peripheral neuropathy, what it was invented to treat. It works extremely well with that. It doesn't matter how long they've had it. It will 99.9% of the time, it'll be effective and it'll make a huge impact, if not complete remission. Wow. It also works almost equally as well with diabetic neuropathy, which is super common and can be very debilitating when you can't feel your feet anymore. That can be a real insidious problem that can lead to more problems. So as a PT, I was very, you know, keen that it cured pain. But then when I found out that it helped restore sensation to numb tissues, that is a really big deal when you think about, you know, the course of somebody's entire life, all of the potential issues that that can help prevent from happening in the first place. It also works extremely well with CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome, formerly known as reflex sympathetic dystrophy, and then also phantom limb pain with amputees. It works extremely well with that. So those four I kind of have on the majority of my advertising to show, if you have one of these four, this, you really need to contact us and talk to us.
Yeah, that's.
And then on my website, I have a whole bunch more. And just this morning, I added on two extra ones because I've had people with all kinds of different rare conditions contact me. And I've found that it works for erythromelalgia and transverse myelitis recently, which are both kind of rare things.
Sure. So it sounds like there's no harm in trying, correct? Is there anything that people should be nervous of?
Sure. It is recognized by the FDA and the CE Council in Europe as safe. There are no side effects associated with it. That being said, depending on what kind of condition you have, this can irritate the underlying condition. So the electrical stimulation can be rather, you know, an irritating signal for someone with CRPS. So if you respond to it, you're always going to respond to it. It's not like it ever stops working. But some people's nervous system, for whatever reason in the research literature, even though they have some of these conditions that it treats really, really well, not everybody responds. And if this, you know, electrical message is perceived as a threat by your nervous system with CRPS, it could potentially flare up the pain. So I always are very upfront that there is some slight risk. There's always risk with medical interventions.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
If this thing works for you, it's either going to cut your pain in half or take you down to a 0 or a 1. That's what the research has shown so far.
Wow.
So the biggest thing is determining if you're a responder or not first. And then if you're a responder, just getting you down as quickly but safely as possible without triggering any flare-ups. But if you are a responder and it does flare up, it will continue to get better after it flares up.
Okay. So my sister has this CRPS stuff, this complex regional pain mm-hmm. syndrome, and it's a result of some trauma she experienced from foot surgery and then wasn't mm-hmm. able to get to a pain clinic because of COVID and the quarantine. And so they described it as she kind of went to the point of no return for anything they could do. And she's not responded to any opiates, opioids, there we go, pills, and she's had something in her back, and that hasn't worked, and so I got really excited when Liza told us that you were coming on, and I'm really happy to hear that you even know what CRPS is, but so that we don't make this all just about me and my family, what is the treatment like? So if I brought Patty to you, what would you do?
So that brings up another very important point to make, is that there are certain contraindications and precautions with this device. If anyone has something that is implanted in them, any kind of electrical device, spinal cord stimulator, pacemaker, defibrillator, I cannot treat them. Because if anything were to happen to one of those very expensive medical device while they were in treatment, the first, you know, finger would be pointed at me.
Sure.
Even though most of those devices are impervious to outside electrical signals, we just don't want to mess with something like that. So we don't take a chance.
Right.
How the typical course of treatment works is the first visits, I usually have people start on a Monday, because if you are a candidate, you need to come, or ideally, it's not a need, but you should come once a day for 2 weeks straight.
Okay.
So we do Monday through Friday, Monday through Friday. Some people get better in less than 10 visits. Some people take more than 10 visits, but we always kind of fall around that 10 visit mark.
Sure.
For some reason, and the vast majority of people use that amount of time.
How long is the visit? Like all day, an hour, 10 minutes?
Nope. So the first visits, I usually take a little bit longer to really hear the story and get to understand what's going on with them and really pinpoint in what is going on. Especially with people that have multiple conditions, trying to figure out where my plan of attack is as far as where am I placing these electrodes and what the prognosis is that this is going to help them. So the first visit is usually 90 minutes, and then every visit after that takes about an hour. The time on the device is 45 minutes, and in that first evaluation, you get a full 45-minute treatment session, because as much as I can guess that it's going to work for somebody, you never really know until we try it out.
Exactly.
Well, you know, and we're going to be coming up on a break, so I want to make sure I get out all of the details while we have the time. So you do these visits for 2 weeks, you said, and then are you done? Are you pain-free?
After that, it's kind of a maintenance phase where you will probably need one visit every 3 to 6 months. So far, I've had a few cases where it's going on 9 months now and they haven't had any return of their pain or numbness.
Max,
most of the time, it's 3 to 6 months.
That's awesome. And it sounds amazing. I want to thank you and direct everyone to go to Max Wellness Pain Relief in Oshkosh.
Yes, thank you. I can't wait to bring Patty to you and get to know you a little bit better, Max.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to hear more.
Yes, thanks so much for coming in tonight. We'll be right back when we're going to update you on the Wisconsin state budget and let you know the good, the bad, and unfortunately, the downright ugly.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza Hellenbrand, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Voss. And we were just talking to Max with Max Wellness Pain Relief in Oshkosh. So you can find out more information there, Max. MaxWellnessPainRelief.com. There was a few things that we missed, and I just want to make sure that we get to them. First thing, money, right?
Right.
It's what people ask. He does not take insurance. I should put that the other way around, right?
Insurance won't cover him
because this is new. So it's $250 a visit, but he is willing to do a free phone consultation to see if you're a good candidate. And if it doesn't work for you, he offers a money back guarantee.
Which is amazing. I mean, who in healthcare does that, right?
Yeah,
I would love a money back guarantee on many of the things that have been talked about, experimented, used on either me or Nicole or my parents. Right. So I'm just really excited about this guy, and I will keep everybody updated on how it goes with Patty. I was going to have her listen. Well, I told her to listen to the show tonight, but she's in air and on air, like in the air on an airplane. There we go. We're on air. And so she's like, I can't. But get this guy's information, because this complex pain regional thing is just really, really bizarre, Liza.
It is. And I'm hoping someday that he will be a fine sponsor of the Empowered Caregiver Show, just like we are proud to announce Badgerscape Landscaping is a proud new sponsor. And Kristen, you had them do some work on your place. How did it go?
Oh, it went great. I mean, I just love Brian, and he was so sweet. I reached out and said, you know, new business. We're a new business. We're trying to help out, and I love your work. And he said, oh, of course we're going to sponsor you. No problem. And he's here in Dane County. He does landscaping design and landscape services, including yard care and maintenance.
Yeah. Hello, caregivers.
Right. And well, and everybody loves our yard so much that his work is like expanding from house to house to house to house, because everyone's like, wait, how did you get all that done? And how much did it cost? And
you
it's
know
reasonable.
What? I don't live that far from you. I can't wait until he works his way down to my place.
Exactly.
But now, switching gears, on May 2nd, the Joint Finance Committee removed more than 500 proposals from the state budget. And once these proposals are moved, they cannot be added back. However, they can be reintroduced as standalone bills.
Yeah, and our friends over at the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities are the ones that are trying to really keep us aware of how to let everyone know what's going on, right? And so important disability priorities are still in the budget, and we want you to think of these items as the edit later pile. These items are still being considered in the budget. Constituent advocates can help make the case how funding increases for disability programs and services will help people with disabilities and their families. The Joint Finance Committee is going to be making decisions on many of these budget items that can change disability programs and funding in meetings in May and June. These are called executive sessions, and they are things that are near and dear to our hearts as caregivers, right?
Mm-hmm. So let's just dig in. We've got this list of what they've taken out and what they're still considering.
Right. And I got to tell you, the first thing is adult long-term care and family caregiving, right? So that's us. We're the family caregivers. There are 6 things that they're still considering, and 3 they've taken out. And the 3 they've taken out are the 3 that I care the most about. And 2 to 3 of the ones that they've kept, I could care less about. Yeah. I don't want to say that those aren't worthwhile things to advocate for, but one of them is the Office of Caregiver Quality Positions.
Yeah. And when we were talking, I never recall being like, when do we want a division of quality assurance position?
We want it now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are not chanting this down the streets. This is not something that people who are family caregivers are asking for. Of course, we want there to be somebody looking at caregiver quality, but when we don't have caregivers, we can't worry about caregiver quality.
Yeah.
And so I'm really frustrated that there are 2 positions, and that really, in my mind, means more big government. And so I'm sort of surprised that the Joint Finance Committee, which tends to have more of a conservative leaning, is keeping in things that are building more government, right, more oversight, rather than, and this is what they've taken out, the caregiver tax credit.
The caregiver tax credit, gone. Expansion for who can use family medical leave, gone. Paid family medical leave, gone.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a division of quality assurance positions opening up.
And an officer of caregiver quality positions. What is that? What is this division? What is this office? They are still doing a few more things. So if you're somebody that wants to keep saying, you know, keep going with what you're going, they are putting more money into respite funding. That's really helpful.
Mm-hmm,
personal care rate increase. So now people who are doing personal care work are going to be able to get paid more. And the family care direct care reimbursement and the HCBS, which is basically home and community-based services. So caregivers that are in your home, mm-hmm. not the family caregivers, but the ones that are paid, they're going to sustain a 5% rate increase. So they are looking at the issue of pay around caregivers, and I've got to give them some credit for that.
Yeah, yeah. And when it comes to the children's long-term care items, the children's long-term support waiver funding to reduce wait lists is gone, taken out. Birth to 3, gone, taken out.
Well, birth to 3 as a program
right,
is taken
right,
out,
right.
But the funding that was being asked for
right.
is being taken out.
Thank
right
you
now.
For that clarification.
No problem. And you know that me as a teacher is a little bit concerned about some of the stuff in the education category. There is not going to be funding for school-based medical services reimbursement or school-based mental health service reimbursement.
Yeah, and they're limiting the number of special needs scholarships. I don't know. To me, I don't want to make this a political issue. It just is like, wow.
Well, it is a political issue.
I know. I don't want to make this a D or an R issue, but
gotcha.
This is all about gutting the schools.
Yeah. Because they're not even going to let they're going to let people do parental school choice and special needs scholarship without requiring licensed teachers. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you're concerned about this, please feel free to reach out to your state representatives. Right? That's the way you can do it. Let them know that you live in their district and ask them to either do a standalone bill on the stuff that's gone or support the stuff that's still being considered.
And when we gonna come back, we are going to finish this discussion of what's coming up or what's in the state bill. And then we are going to talk, the state budget. And then we are going to talk about the Powerful Tools for Caregivers course. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen. And we are so proud and happy that today we finished teaching our first Powerful Tools for Caregiver course.
Right. But before we get into that, I'm going to finish being the social studies teacher and remind everybody what we were just talking about in the last segment, which is that the Joint Finance Committee has taken some stuff out of these budget proposals, thrown it on the floor. That's called a pile that if we want that to get back in, we have to ask for it as a standalone bill, or we can ask our legislators to support any of the stuff that's still left in the editing pile, right?
Yeah.
And if we want them to do that, what we need to do is figure out who our state senator and our state representative is. You can go to Wisconsin.gov and you can type in your address and your zip code, and it will let you know exactly who's representing you down in the Capitol on State Street, and you can then get the contact information for those people. It's really important when you email them and or call them. We've had them on our show. They tell us they listen. They tell us they read, that you tell them where you live and that you are a constituent. And then you share with them what you want them to do. So you ask them, can you please do a standalone bill on the caregiver tax credit? That's what I will be doing first thing tomorrow.
Exactly. And for the things that have been scrapped, advocate those for those too, if those mean something to you, because like Kristen said, they can be a standalone bill, and I'll contain my excitement about my Powerful Tools for Caregivers course for just a minute longer, because you're right. There were a few other things on this list of things that got scrapped, I guess, that are, what's the word, gulling?
Yeah.
And one of them is broadband expansion and digital equity, which is so key in rural caregiving.
Exactly. I mean, you were pointing it out to me as we were going through this list, that what that has done what having broadband and internet access has done for caregivers and people that need a disproportionate amount of healthcare is it's allowed them to not have to make these huge treks into major cities, right? Mm-hmm. They can do telehealth. Yeah. But if you don't have reliable broadband, then you can't have reliable telehealth. And so it's just unbelievable to me that they don't see the value in investing in that.
Yeah. And the other thing is the ABLE accounts, the Achieving a Better Life Experience accounts. And if you're not familiar, those are savings accounts for people with disabilities. They can put money in there to kind of shield it somewhat so they can be on the Social Security and receive other benefits, but then it only can be used for certain things. So yeah, there are some rules and guidelines to it, but it really helps those with disabilities that may be on the fence of losing benefits. And that makes no sense to me why they gave that the poo-poo, because it's just, you can still get ABLE accounts.
Yeah, we have one.
We both have them. We just go to another state, which means we're sending money and business into another state. So I really have to do some research on why creating savings accounts for people with disabilities is a bad idea. Don't get it.
Exactly. Don't understand why they made some of the decisions they did. So just keep tuning in to us, and we'll keep you abreast of what we know, and also keep looking at the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities website. They are doing an excellent job, as is Survival Coalition, on keeping us all abreast of what's happening with the Joint Finance Committee and our various and valuable tax dollars.
Right. Now, can I be excited?
Yes, you can be excited.
Oh, it's about time.
I know.
So we just finished our first Powerful Tools for Caregiving course.
Yeah, well, I think it's fun that you're so excited. And, you know, I think for me, what's been really cool is recognizing that I do like teaching adults. I didn't think I would. I thought I've only been teaching high school students because I like adolescents and I'm not always sure I like adults. But we had just the most fabulous group of people with us in our first course, and it was online. So we had a couple people from outside of Wisconsin and various people throughout Wisconsin joining us. And what the Powerful Tools for Caregivers course is first of all, it's evidence-based. So this is a course where there has been a lot of research done by, you know, professors, reputable people at Iowa State University, to really put together a curriculum that makes sense and that's been tested as being really effective in having an impact on caregivers, right?
Yes.
So that's why it's considered Powerful Tools.
And if you missed this one, I gotta say, you missed out. Not gonna lie. But we're gonna hold them again sometime in the early fall. We need a breather. We're gonna regroup. We'll get that information out to everyone, either on our website. Facebook is our first go-to. And of course, you're gonna hear us promoting it on the show.
Yep, definitely. And we'll have some in-person options as well. So it won't just stay virtual. But what I really wanna get across to people, or what I wanna kind of process with you for a couple of moments, Liza, is what is it about this class that was so effective and so important?
I honestly think, well, there's a lot of things, and it's hard to get me excited about a course, especially when you can sign up for free courses, because they're a dime a dozen. But the power of communication.
Yeah.
How to effectively advocate, have hard conversations, you know, analyze your own personal feelings.
Right. And I think what made this class unique for me, because I've had tons of coursework and tons of experience exploring and teaching about communication, is that it really made it practical in empowering yourself. And so here we are, the empowered caregivers, right? And we're trying to give people tools so that they can be empowered. And the tools in communication that are part of this course are centered around two big, deep ideas. The first one is that it's important to be assertive and not aggressive. Because when we are caregivers, we are dealing with people who are coming up against some of the most sensitive and vulnerable things in life. They're coming up against death. They're coming up against limitations in their physical abilities, right? They're coming up against limitations in how they think or what they remember or what they recognize. And so when you're the caregiver who's having to figure out how to bear witness to that, but also care for these people, there are times where you have to know, and we, I guess I shouldn't be saying you, that we have to know how to be assertive so that we're able to get what needs to be done done, but we're also able to do it in a way that doesn't tear us apart and doesn't make us lose ourselves.
Right. Well, and create more friction and things can spiral quickly in heated arguments, or, you know, even not even heated, really, you know.
Right. It doesn't necessarily have to be. And so the tools that, so there's very specific communication strategies that we teach. And the one around being assertive rather than aggressive is the idea of looking at behavior. So the acronym is DESC, and it essentially stands for describing behavior, because when you do that, you're taking away the judgment and the statements about somebody's character, but instead it's about, here's the behavior that's happening, and then expressing how I feel, rather than using those you statements, right? And instead really getting to, I feel this way when this happens, helps the care recipient understand they're not being attacked. Mm-hmm. Right. And then,
well, and not only care recipient, I just want to add, you know, there's lots of conversations you have with spouses,
yes,
family members, right, parents, you know,
medical partners. I mean,
all of it.
Yeah, exactly. And having this approach is really, I think, beneficial, right? Having it in your back pocket.
Yeah. And just an effective communication tool. Period.
Yes.
You know, we were just saying today in our last course, as we were going through something, how much that really helped me in a different area of my life, not even related to caregiving.
Right.
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 So effective communication, key.
Yes, definitely. And then the last plug I want to give for the effective communication that really helped me, and I gave an example today in class about working with Nicole last night. They call it the Aikido style of communication. And I don't have a ton of experience in martial arts. I know a little bit from the movies and TV and all that kind of stuff. But what they are expressing in this research they've done is that the Aikido style of communication is really meeting somebody and aligning with them where they're at, mm-hmm, and kind of going into almost a dance together, mm-hmm, right? And by aligning yourself, you're really recognizing that you can put yourself in the other person's shoes. And again, you're right, it doesn't always have to be a care recipient. It can be anybody you're in relationship with. I mean, I don't know that I would necessarily try this out on the person who's checking me out at the grocery store, but
right.
How are you? Let's empathize.
I feel.
Exactly. I can see your feeling, right?
Right. But you know what?
We kid,
but that's not what we're teaching, right?
No.
Right.
Right, exactly. No, not at all. Instead, what it's really looking at is, what does this person need from me to feel better?
Yeah.
Right. And so when it's really helping get through conflict, right, as you know, really emotionally charged situations and reducing anger, balancing emotions so that people can deal with issues. Right. It's not about just, talking about the weather or chit chatting.
Right.
Right. And it's not really being silly and full of kind of overscripted talk that comes from TV
right,
shows.
Yeah. According to page 22,
right,
now I say, no, it doesn't work like that.
No, not at all. No. And what else do you feel besides communication was really key to get out of this class?
There are a lot of things. One, we did a lot around goal setting, and I like the fact that we've all been to a lot of these conferences, right, where it's information overload.
Yeah.
And then you leave and nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they really incorporated some accountability,
mm-hmm,
and that we take the time in class to relate it to your personal situation and make it meaningful or really think it through. Not,
right,
you know, here's what you do. See ya.
Right. It definitely is not structured to be an information overload. The whole point is, in my colleagues would be laughing. We call it scaffolding in teaching, and I hated that word when we started using it in our professional educationese, because I kept thinking scaffolding is that stuff that they put up on the tall skyscrapers so that people can do window washing. What the heck does that have to do with me? But what it does have to do with is seeing that there's all different types of learning styles, and there's all different types of places where people can understand and apply things.
Right.
So you can just show up to the class, and that can be enough, the 90 minutes with us. But there also are some handouts, some worksheets, a workbook. So there's, mm-hmm, opportunities to dive deeper, to personalize it more, to expand, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I think what you're talking about in terms of the action planning and the goal setting,
mm-hmm,
is that it really, again, is evidence-based. There's a lot of psychology behind this, which is why I had so much fun teaching it,
mm-hmm,
is it's really the evidence shows that if you can put together an action plan that is very specific,
mm-hmm,
very behavior-based and very specific, you're more likely to accomplish it. And then what we really dove deep into is that it's not about succeeding at it, because
right,
then if we fail at it because we didn't do it, we feel terrible and then we stop doing things, right?
Right, right.
And so I thought it was really great that we kept reminding folks, and you kept reminding me, that this isn't about whether you succeeded or failed.
Right.
It's really just, did you accomplish it or not? And if you didn't, what was the roadblock?
Well, that's what I was gonna say. If you didn't, no big deal. But was it too lofty? Did you know what needs to change? And there's no judgment to it. It's all an opportunity to learn and grow. And people can be as active in the course as they want. I just want to throw that out there. Like, oh, this sounds like group therapy or something.
Oh, no.
But no.
No, not at all. The funny thing is that as though it's not group therapy, your coaching was a really valuable piece to this. Can you share for just a moment, where did you see yourself as a coach being able to kind of step in and have this class work for folks? We got great feedback today, so you can tell that's part of why we're jazzed.
Right.
We're like, woo, we did a good job, pat on the back. But Liza, you were a good coach.
Thank you. Yeah. I think some of it where I had a hard time where I wanted to bite my thumb or, yeah, what is when people felt a certain way to really dive in deep. You know, mm-hmm. what does that feeling feel like? Or what, you know, and the coaching end of it is not talking or teaching. It's asking questions that get people to think.
Ah, exactly. So that's why you were so good at helping people figure out what got in their way for their action plans.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, and you were also super good at telling me, stop trying to solve everyone's problems.
And you were super good at being a super facilitator like you always are.
Well, thank you. And when we come back in just a moment, we're going to talk a little bit about how we can help each other through the goods and the bads of our own personal situation with caregiving today.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza Hellenbrand, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Voss.
Hello.
Hello. And we want to talk just a minute about our caregiver gift box. We are going to be giving away 4 gift boxes to wonderful women that are supporting their husbands with dementia.
80% of people with Alzheimer's disease and related dementias are receiving care in their homes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Each year, more than 16 million Americans provide unpaid care for family and friends with Alzheimer's disease and other related dementias.
So those of you out there listening who are experiencing this, please understand that we are seeing you, hearing you, and understanding you, right? Approximately 2/3 of dementia caregivers are women, and about 1 in 3 caregivers are age 65. Or older.
Yeah. Can you imagine 65 and older caring for someone with dementia? And lastly, 1/4 of those people are in the sandwich generation, meaning that they are not only caring for an aging parent, but they're also caring for a child under the age of 18.
Caregivers for those Alzheimer's and other related dementias was listed as one of the most difficult caregiving roles out there as far as the impact on the caregiver goes. So if you are in that position, please reach out for support. Please nominate yourself, right?
Yeah.
Nominate a friend. Let us know about some of the different support groups you guys might be in so that we can really recognize you and shower you with some attention. This was a wonderful case manager who shared some of these women's names with us who are doing this outstanding job supporting their husbands with dementia. And so we will be sending out 4 gift boxes to them later on this week.
Can't wait. Our caregiver update. It's been a while since we just...
Yeah, talked.
Yeah.
How's it going for you?
It's going okay. So my 19-year-old son that's on the autism spectrum has an intellectual disability. He was going to the Edgewood Cutting Edge program here in Madison for students with intellectual disabilities. And he is home from college
for the summer,
for
first summer break,
for the first summer break. So I had, you know, to do some adjusting. That means now again my entire day revolves around, you know, his schedule and where he needs to go and what he needs to do. And one thing that I shared and learned in the class today is when he has downtime, he either likes to just pace or just you sit and look at his phone like for hours on end, and just the guilt You know, I think as caregivers, the amount of guilt we carry, and that, you know, I should be entertaining him, I should be interacting with him, I should be doing something with him. But the realization that you helped me come to today is, you know, hey, Liza, did you ever ask him
if he wants you to be doing all this?
Is he looking for more to do? You know, and which is true, because half the time when I'm like, hey, do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? He's like, no, actually not half the time, like 95% of the time.
I know.
Yeah. So that was one of my personal takeaways from this course that we were talking about that we offer for caregivers, one coming up this fall, is the emotion of guilt and how to deal with that and how to let it go, you know?
So mine is resentment, and I'm not doing a very good job letting it go right now, Liza.
It happens.
Yeah. There's just a lot going on in my personal life.
I won't hold it against you.
Thank you. Because it's not towards you, right? It's towards the people that I have to take care of.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's these big things happening, and they're taking up a lot of my day and a lot of my emotional and headspace. And it's justifiable. I'm dealing with the passing of a friend, and a childhood friend. And I still had to caregive last night. I still had to figure out how to get a bath in, how to get the medicine taken, how to, you know, not get sucked into the drama and the power struggles. And so, you know,
Trying to process and grieve.
Yeah. So I cut a few corners and took a deep breath and was like, you go in here and do you, because I need to go do me for a little bit. And I don't want to be resentful. I didn't say that to her, but I just basically said, mom's heard some sad news. And then Nicole usually wants to turn that into, oh, I should be sad. And I was like, no, 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 you don't know the news. You don't know the people. You don't need to be sad. And mom's not going to be sad right now, but mom needs a little time and space to talk to a friend to, because we've had some sad news. But what you can do is to help mom. And actually my friend was on speakerphone and said this to her too. So I actually was, you know, leaning on friends and bringing in other people, because sometimes it helps Nicole to hear it from other folks. She said, hey, sweetie, it's going to be really helpful for your mom if you just go into your room and play on your iPad for a little bit and give mom some time to talk with me. So I'm working on that resentment piece, because, you know, about, I think 4 hours before that all was going down, I remember crying to you, and you gave me a hug, and I said, and all that's going through my head right now, Liza, is that I still have to caregive at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no.
Doesn't stop.
It doesn't stop. I mean, and I always feel a little, I don't know about in my situation. Caden does not have a ton of needs. But it allows,
they're
different needs. I mean, I'm always going to have to be there in some capacity, but I love that it gives me the opportunity to help support, educate, and celebrate other caregivers.
And you're doing a great job of that. And we're excited that we're going to get to do more of that with folks at a retreat that we are planning for November. It's going to be in Wisconsin Rapids. It's going to be for that first weekend in November, November 3rd through November 5th. Let everybody else know another big fun thing we're doing, Miss Stand-Up Comedian.
Yeah. the Comedy for Caregivers, Tuesday, October 3rd at the Madison Comedy Club on State. We're finalizing some of those details, so we can't wait to get that news out there. And I'm wondering if I'm going to do some stand-up comedy.
I think you should. I don't think people know, but you've taken a class. You've actually had to do some of that stand-up. You wouldn't let me know where it was happening, so I couldn't come see you. But you did it.
I did it.
I think that's something to be proud of.
I'm still standing.
Yep. And we got feedback from one of our guests that you were the funniest out of all of us. And so you've got it in you, girl.
Somebody's got to be the class clown, right?
Exactly. So I hope that at our fundraiser, the Comedy for Caregivers on Tuesday, October 3rd, that you will stand up and be an MC and give us some of your best stuff.
Yep. I'll give it my best shot. And I want to remind everyone to listen to us live on Wednesday nights from 7 to 8. If you missed us, you can always find our shows on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and of course, the Empowered Caregiver Community.com.
And you know what, Liza? We know personally and exponentially, not exponentially, yeah. What is that expression when we're living through other people, that caregiving
vicariously,
good job, that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting. So that's why we want to end each show with a positive note.
You got this.
And together we are stronger. So stay connected to the empowered caregiver community. Night, everybody.